Bill Tompkins, and talking about underground caverns, tunnels. Bill says the planet itself is rather full of bubbles, empty spaces, voids all over in the crust of the Earth. And it was formed that way. It's kind of like something that you've seen maybe in the kitchen when you're baking something. Bake a pie or a cake. And there'll be bubbles, and then they'll end up just with, especially cakes, there'll just be a space there. Now, when I have one more question, then we have another topic that you might want to talk about, off-planet evacuation vehicles. Maybe we can get to that. Now, a question about the tunnels and the huge caverns, the bubbles, if you will, at TRW. What was TRW making of the fact that some of these were still occupied? Was there contact? Were there ground rules set up that we had to abide by in terms of reptilians and other races who live on this planet and have lived here longer than we have? What was the connectivity there between our culture and theirs, if any?
I have to say it was extensive, but if you can visualize a stiff arm attitude. I mean by that when the laboratory principals were returning back from the, let's use Denver, for instance, anybody that's listening to this program now that has landed at Denver and come out through the walkways to get to the parking area, those long strips, rectangular walkways, there's illustrations on the walls, okay?
Yes, there are. Yeah.
And just for now, Jeff, would you describe any one of those for the audience that you know about?
Some of them are rather horrific. The primaries they've been talked about for years. If you look up Denver Airport murals online right now, you'll find any number of images, and some of the portrayals in these things are rather grim. They're not little children playing in parks. So lots of imagery, lots of messages, allegedly from the globalist elite. Did that help?
Yes. Some of these are just gross. They're not
They're
even
ugly. Very evil. You're right.
Yeah, the word really is evil. And this relates, of course, to the tunnels under the Denver area. And because I know all of this, again, is hard to visualize, but when TRW is trying to run the studies, they go to these locations, they attempt to penetrate into previously excavated areas and previously open areas, and in some cases get to the point of this is a let me use the right word here, no trespassing area. A little bit like what the astronauts got when they landed on the moon. And so it's not hostile, but in some cases it's rather, you really realize that they're not going to be talking with you at all. And so the communication between the TRW studies, which was 11 different civilization people, Greys and Nordics being the primary, a very stiff arm attitude. And so you don't walk up to a gate and there's right. a guard there, but essentially, when you got to the bottom of the stairs in some of these facilities, like Denver and like Salt Lake City, everything is normal till you get to their area, and essentially it's no trespassing. And you can see in sometimes, you can see some structures, and the photography that the operatives got, I'm sorry, that the Navy, the TRW technicians got, some of it was clear, most of it was hazy type of pictures. In some cases, there was what you would call smoke. In other cases, there was really enjoyable air. It's intriguing air, almost like lakeside, something of this side. And all of these different reactions that the different technicians that were doing these penetrations ran into, the Denver airport type thing, these illustrations, you have to ask the question, why would the airport allow these illustrations to be put up on the walls?
Absolutely. They're that grim, that ugly, that evil. And I remember when they first opened the airport, it was big news, and then it went away, and then it kind of resurfaces from time to time. They are as ugly as it gets, really. Death, human suffering. You, as Bill just said, you have to ask yourself, why would something like this be put?
Yeah. And why would you allow it to be put in a commercial airport?
Or did you have a choice?
Or did you have a choice? And you're right. And so there are more things going on. And I believe that TRW Systems Group, it's not just that they're instrumental in the thrust, but gosh, I've got some stuff coming out in my second book, which describes TRW. And all I can say is that's going to be an extremely interesting read. TRW is totally different than anything that you ever have been involved in. First of all, it's an enormous campus just near the ocean. There's no walls around it. There's no fence around it. It's a secret think tank, but it's in a downtown area near a high school and near a grade school. And their younger kids skateboard through the campus of TRW. One of the guys will, of course, tap him on the shoulder. We'd rather you not do that. But I'm only saying, there is nothing that makes you understand what's going on in those buildings and underneath the ground there. Okay? It's a totally different world to work in. Completely different. And I've tried to describe this in detail. I've given a number of examples, just getting a feel of how different that largest think tank on the planet essentially operated.
Is it still operating at full potential right now, today?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, but it's Grumman bought it, so Grumman got all the goodies, okay? They borrowed a bunch of money and they bought CRW? Yeah, they did. And like we said before, they went back to Virginia, Grumman did, Northrop Grumman, and they bought the largest aircraft construction facility on the planet that builds aircraft carriers. Holy. So give some credit to Northrop. Okay, there it is.
Well, I don't know if you ever got to see it, but I sent you through Frank Chile, who makes all these possible, I sent you the final interview with John Northrop, and it was fascinating.
Fascinating. Thank you.
Oh,
yes, I did. Unbelievable, okay?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Now, here's another quickie. You mentioned stiff arm. You mentioned you didn't have to be told, mind your business, and there'll be no trouble. You don't mess with the ETs. You don't mess with the reptilians. They're doing their thing. You're doing your thing. While Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin were on the lunar surface, Neil Armstrong switched to the medical channel, the medical frequency, and spoke directly with the chief medical officer back on Earth. Now, they're on the moon. And he said, they're here. They're parked on the side of the crater. They're watching us. End quote. So, did they go over and try to shake hands? No. They did what they were there to do, and they, like I say, running their own track. Stiff arm. No need to talk. Just do your thing.
Yeah, and they were parked on half of the other side of the crater.
Too. That's right.
Some pretty large vehicles, okay? And some of the fellows were standing underneath them because these kilometer-long spacecraft carriers, primarily reptilian, were floating above the edge of the crater, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so under several of those, which went halfway around the crater, oh my gosh, on several of them, there were these 9-foot people standing on the surface of the moon with their hands on their hips. Groups of them, reptilian extraterrestrials, standing, watching our astronauts go pick up the rocks, put Freemason plaque down before they did anything. And, wow. This whole thing is pretty wild. Okay, I want to get back to this for just a few minutes if we still got time.
Yeah, sure.
The technicians that went to the end of the tunnels, if you want to call it that, or essentially the entry, okay, to these massive caverns.
Right.
The reptilian facilities particularly are unbelievable futuristic cities with thousands and thousands of people living and working there. They're not a little town. They're massive cities underneath the ground in these caverns all over your planet. Wow. And I'm just trying to say that we technically are not doing enough. It's exposing the fact that there's tunnels and there's caverns.
You know, Bill, what...
study it. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
My concern about all this is what we as a species, the so-called caretaker sentient species of the planet, are doing to the planet is destroying it. How long will these ET races who live here, who visit here, allow this to continue? That's the big question. I didn't expect you to answer it. I mean, it's just, it's a rhetorical question.
Well, actually, there's probably a dozen different answers, but again, from TRW's analysis of all the different factors, and there's thousands of factors they're addressing, okay, on your planet, in your planet. And they're totally documented and convinced that civilizations have been living inside of your planet, and maybe they, some of them were us. They were humans. But yes, there's a half a dozen other civilizations that are still there now, living there. And actually, what happens on the outside may not bother them at all. Because like on the moon or like on Mars, particularly Mars, the surface, the weather outside is not good at all, but it's really good weather inside, okay? And so this is a standard way of life to other civilizations out in the galaxy. And it may be that we will find that even 40 or 50% of the other stars, planets that we go out to, TRW was of the feeling that most of them are actually going to be living under.
Well, it makes perfect sense. Sure.
Because it's more protection.
Very much more protection. Easier to control the environment. Do whatever you want down there.
You guys here are seeing the picture where what Jeff is trying to say, it's not just Antarctica and what we're doing down there, but the fact is that the ice is really melting, okay? And the oceans are really going to come up. This is not some hypothetical made-up story. This is real. And so it's in the reports on other programs in TRW. It's been in there for 15, 20 years, okay? Now it's all under Northrop, but I'm saying the information's been there for a long time, and it is being continually studied. Because this hasn't gone away, it got worse. Now, I want to say something that relates to that, because today we had this, yesterday rather, that we had this birthday party thing, and I got a chance to talk to some of the grandkids. And my son's son, our grandson, he and his girlfriend, beautiful girl, we got the three of us got to talk, and he is detailing me a description of the problem of the melting ice and the problem not just of the water rising, okay, which can foul up every every city on the planet that's close to the ocean, because how far is it going to go? And then if you get an earthquake and then a tsunami from that, you're in that area, forget it, because you're not going to be around. Those boxes full of things that this kid, he's, 20 years old, going to the university with his girlfriend, and they're talking about the details of the results that's going to take place with the melting of the ice, and they are truthfully concerned. Now, how many other students that age are thinking in the same way, I don't know, but they are indicating their friends are asking these questions.
Well, good
for
them.
Totally different than what we sort of perceive that those younger people doing, because they all they want to do is smoke pot, and that's not what they're doing. And I'm saying that I was staggered yesterday. I had about 20 minutes, 30 minutes there, and just let them talk. And to me, they were asking real questions about essentially published information about the magnitude of human penetration into Antarctica, how far back they were doing it, what they've learned, just on and on and on about stuff that we're trying to talk about here. Well, so this is, I'm only saying that you're asking the question, and it's legitimate, and it's real. And whether we want to do this, we're going to have to face this situation. And you're going to have to think like other civilizations think on other stars, planets out there who have had to go through the same thing we have to go through.
You know, Bill, 40% of the world's population lives within 100 kilometers of the coast, the ocean.
Wow.
40%.
Wow. That's a double wow. Yeah, that, you know, that's, and unfortunately, that's real. Okay? Now, everybody says, gee whiz, that never happened, so I don't give a darn. Okay? They're not looking at the real picture. But it's surprising to talk to several people in the last couple of days that sort of shocked me. I thought this was really cool of them.
I agree.
Okay.
It's nice to hear about young people like that.
I'm going to give one example on that part of it, and that if the ice did what we think it should do, just melt over a long period of time, that would give you time to sort of try to fix stuff.
Right.
But we have other geological conditions, like my cousin Walter used to stand up on the soapbox and yell. Nobody listened to him. Many situations on this planet, and according to TRW, are occurring on millions of other planets overnight. And so if what has happened before on this planet, which is essentially Noah builds the ark because he got tapped on the shoulder and said, hey, it's going to get a whole bunch of water pretty
quick.
Right.
And
so he throws everybody he can to him in there. And so you say, okay, well, I don't believe that. But remember what I told you guys before when I was working for Admiral Riccobata, and the operative finished his briefing coming back from Germany on the fantastic things that the reptilians were doing with the Germans, and it comes up at the last minute, Noah's Ark and the flood was real. And that's when I was sitting right next to Rick Abadev. He reached out and hit that table with his fist, and I thought the typist was she was scared to death. And he said, damn it, I knew that was real. I knew that that really happened. I knew that. And, of course, as we've said here before, we know of seven situations since Noah did his thing. Okay, none of them were as bad as that, but several of them were like as much as 30 to 40% of that, which means you have volcanic eruptions on faults, some of them running from Alaska down California to the west part of South America to Antarctica, and they all go off at the same time. That's another kind of thing that happens with an unstable planet that we live on. And so I'm not trying to scare people. All I'm trying to say is we have a lot to learn. We need to listen to the Nordics. We need to work with the Nordics. And it's a situation that, for whatever reason, we've allowed the reptilians to control our minds, and we've allowed this situation to exist for thousands and thousands of years. We need to fix that. We need to back off, get into this. Everybody get into the subject, ask the questions, and demand the answers, and then get involved.
Is it time? Is it time for the Nordics to step forward and issue the warning? You either stop doing what you're doing now, or you're going to destroy yourselves and the planet. Planet will recover over the millions and millions of years.
It will,
but
yeah.
You won't. It's going to take you a long time to come back. You'll have to crawl out of the muck again. It's time, Bill. If they're going to help us, if they're going to show us the way, it's time. Look what we've done at Hanford, for God's sakes. Hanford is the biggest death potential of any particular item in the nuclear industry on the planet. It's right there in the Tri-Cities area of Washington. Hanford, they had a tunnel collapse 2 weeks ago, and it's out of the news now. It's gone. It should still be in the news.
Nobody said anything.
Hardly anything. It lasted a day. We have to have help, Bill. We're not going to do it. The controllers of this planet are taking the average IQ lower and lower. Life expectancy is shrinking. We are now dumber than dirt in so many ways. I'm not talking about this audience. I'm talking about those who are addicted to their smartphones, addicted to the mainstream media, addicted to sports, addicted to pharmaceuticals, addicted to drugs, whatever. We have an addictive culture. And it's all too easy to direct this culture into an addictive profile. Choose your poison. It doesn't matter. We are under mind control, as you just said. Massive psychotronic mind control, either of our own doing or somebody else's doing. But we, I am ashamed of this species, are getting dumber and dumber. Now, I'm not blaming us, because I don't think it's our fault, but it is happening nonetheless. And isn't it time for our friends, the reptilians, but our real friends, the Nordics, to step forward and either work through people like you, which maybe maybe that's what's going on with all your appearances on this program. Maybe they are reaching out through you to us. I wouldn't bet against it. But it's time, Bill. It's time.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with everything you've said, Jeff. And I'd like to give one example that's in the files of the Northrop secret think tank that used to be TRW, Redondo Beach there. When they, the ice melting problem, what they had discovered, of course, from studies way back, that some thousands of years back, there were trees and shrubs and everything else growing on the South Pole, and there was no ice there at all, because you had a little burp in the planet, and you got a pole shift, and you got a few other things that took place. and it ended up that the South Pole got snow and ice. Okay, now it's sort of in a reverse condition. So in the file in the Northrop facility, One Space Park, Redondo Beach, today, there's a document which states that in the rising of the ocean, unbelievably short time period, because of other activities affecting the melting of the ice, that San Diego, Southern California, will be under ice in less than 10 minutes. That's in the file from the old TRW files on this whole thing that we're talking about.
Hollywood made a film about that once, and New York froze in a matter of minutes. And I've forgotten the mechanics of it, but yeah, it's interesting to know that this was acknowledged by TRW as well.
And so these, I've said this before, but it relates to exactly what you're saying here, that TRW again, these end up that, I would say 80%, 75 to 80% of the 200 people in the secret think tank inside of Douglas, okay, were convinced that we were in a situation where it would be far better for us to be living on another star's planet, and which is a utopian planet, and therefore we should design and build a 17-kilometer-long space transport. And you've seen the drawing of it in my first book.
Uh-huh.
You've seen a drawing out of the secret think tank in Douglas of a 17-kilometer-long transport that's put together in blocks, like you put together aircraft carriers today now. Unlike...
Right.
And I've seen that...
it's how the Germans used to build their submarines in segments,
yes,
and then they bolt them together.
So what we're saying to ourselves is that it was accepted back then that for numerous reasons, not just the geological, but for numerous reasons, this involved the distance we are from a small star like our sun. It's not a large star. There's many of them that are much larger. And so then you would be further out if you're on another star's planet. And the planet can be 50 times the size of this little Earth thing that we live on. And studying all of these potential places is what TRW, now Northrop Grumman, are doing, as you, as the rest of us are talking here right now. That's what they're working on. And and answering your question, Jeff, I can't justify why I am unable to talk to the three people that I work with at Douglas on the Apollo program, the three Nordic people, the two girls and the fella. I have been unable to contact them, okay? And I've had a number of people tell me how they can do a seance or whatever it is. I never made it work. So I am not directly contacting them now, and I very definitely am open to suggestions if any. Got it. I'll try that too. But I agree with you. We need that now. And it's important that people address this situation as real and that we can fix some things. Other things, it's really hard to do because of the mind control of the reptilians. And that's real, and we need to fix that. Now, I would say, and I've said this in the technical meetings on this subject, in every secret organization meetings, I say in the meeting that everybody in this room is essentially not being totally mind controlled. And I will say this to the audience right now, the people to this program and have been listening to it are not the people that have full mind control, period. I am saying you guys out there in the audience are asking these questions because you want answers too. And so your mind, yes, it's controlled, but not to the point of where they just make you into a zombie, which unfortunately a lot of people are.
So what you're saying, I think, Bill, if I can rephrase it, is that a lot of the people listening, maybe the majority, are listening not out of coincidence or happenstance. They're here because their subconscious, whatever you want to call it, knows that there's real information here that's coming through a man who was, and may be still, connected to the Nordics, the good guys, when he was back at Douglas. And I'll repeat this again. My father was public relations director of Douglas Aircraft at the same time that Bill Tompkins was working there. They didn't know each other, but my father was privy to some things, not at the depth that Bill was, certainly, but he clearly, and I remember as a little boy, knew things that he didn't want to talk about or couldn't talk about. And you know what else, Bill, that he used to do? You still there? Oh, we might have lost Bill. All right, well, that little beep beep might have been time to redial, I guess. Well, what my dad would say, he would, I'll repeat this when Bill comes back on. He would talk about TRW, Thompson Rimmer Wooldridge, with always this great awe and respect, which is interesting because they were competitors of sorts. Douglas had its own super secret think tanks, did cutting edge work for years and years. My father was there 16 years, I think. And TRW, still today under another name, is doing the same kind of extremely advanced. I mean, we're talking decades of advanced analysis, research. They're processing information. They're exploring. They're doing remarkable things that the average person just wouldn't and really couldn't and probably shouldn't be aware of. It's just not. It's not for everybody. It isn't. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if Mr. Tompkins is being used in a way as a benevolent channel to try to gently wake people up. He just had his 94th birthday yesterday, and you've been sitting here listening to a 94-year-old man who, by all rights, probably shouldn't even be here, but should not be able to articulate with the astonishing detail that he does. He has it. It's all there. And I never come away from one of these programs without being really awestruck at what the human mind is capable of doing if it's allowed to. But we are at a position now where we kind of have to make it happen. You know who isn't going to let us. They don't want us to think. They want to dumb us down. That's what the cell towers are all about. And if you've ever seen that documentary, it's a YouTube. The average cell tower technically should need one black 1-inch power cable to go up to the top to power up the antenna receivers and transmitters. Some of them have 20 and 30 of these cables going up to the top. And you have to ask yourself, why all the power? What is it needed for? And the answer would seem to be a massive mind control, which is in all probability quite real and in all probability has been here for a long time. We're facing other things too, of course. GMO food, nanotechnology. Nanotech is the key to understanding what's going to happen to us. I used to have a nanotech expert on the program, and he all of a sudden was no longer available. Obviously, he was told, stop talking. You're telling too much. But when is the last time, I'll ask you again, just rhetorically, you heard the word nanotechnology in a mainstream media newscast? You haven't. And that is where the big money is being focused. A lot of it. So we're still trying to get Bill back on. He may be, I don't know, he may be sitting there waiting. Hard to tell. When you lose a connection, sometimes you think you're still connected and you're going to get back on. Hopefully he'll hang up and we'll be able to reconnect with him. Todd is trying his best right now. Now, let me remind you that tomorrow is June 1st. That means the year is half gone already. And you might want to look back on this half year and just ask yourself, what have I accomplished in the last half a year? How many more half years do I have left? What have I done? And the bigger question is, what has been done to us? When the President Donald J. Trump, U.S. State Department, 2 days ago now, removed all limits on the number of so-called Muslim refugees whom the United Nations will be allowed to bring in here, that should have sent a major chill up your spine and sounded the largest alarm you can hear. These people, unfortunately, will not fit in with Western culture, society. You know the story. We've told you over and over again. So in the second half year of 2017, beginning tomorrow, June 1st, what would you like to accomplish? Set a goal for yourself. Whatever it is, become goal-oriented, because that's what they are trying to take away from us. They don't want us to be goal-oriented. They want us just to float along and react and drool and do nothing. And that's unfortunately what many people are doing. So we will have to wait and see what happens. And there is Mr. Tompkins back. Hello, Bill. Welcome back.
Hey, I'm back. Okay. Sorry about that.
It's all right. All right. We have about 6-7 minutes maybe at the most. And we will see what happens. So let's wrap it up. And are we talking about a potential mass migration off this planet, or the potential of a mass migration into the planet? Would the powers that be make these caverns and caves available to, I know they have their place there, but to the masses to protect them?
Actually, answering your question before you ask another one, this is a situation with which we need to get heavy into and essentially come up with two options. One, structure and organize what is required to live underground like other humanoid people do.
Right.
Secondly, to attempt to detail the situations that could go wrong and the possibility that it would be advantageous to structure and organize large level of moving to a different star's planet. And you have to accept that sometimes these conditions necessitate moving. And the third approach is to fix the situation here and realize the magnitude of the flood problem, what we could do to handle that, and I think we need to address all three of the approaches and not get excited and not get scared and not get worried, but get into the programs, get involved in this, address it, talk to your friends about it, and hopefully we can get more documentation that's been classified out so that everybody can be exposed to what's going on. And I want to say something. This isn't just Bill Tompkins. There's a lot of other people on this planet that are getting some help, okay? And they're talking, too. There's a young man that's over in France. His name is Earl Lellinger. And he's an American working in Paris, and he has a program to structure and organize a whole approach on this thing. And he's independent. I've been talking with him. I have some of his data. We're reviewing this. And so I'm trying to say we need these people to come forward. That's what we need now. And participate in...
Right. It's time to step up. Absolutely. Well, while you were gone, I made a point, and it's not particularly intellectually profound, but it is a point. And the point is, tomorrow is June 1st. Half of another year is gone already, Bill. Gone. And I challenge the people out there to try to ask themselves, what have I done in the last half year? What did I use this first half of year time for? And after they've answered that question, if they can, they should make plans to do something meaningful, either for themselves, for others, for the planet, in the next half year, which will go by just as fast, if not faster, than the one we just watched waltz past us. Time to make a move. Make it a better planet. Make your life better. Even if it's stop eating red meat. Whatever it is, it doesn't matter. Use the time to do something constructive.
Yes.
That makes sense?
I agree with you. That's very important, and I think everybody listening needs to do that, exactly. It's extremely important.
Well, listen, Bill, we're out of time. Thank you. We'll look forward to our next conversation. These are really remarkable conversations for a number of reasons. And again, on behalf of probably everyone listening around the world, happy birthday to you, Bill Tompkins. Keep at it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You keep at it.
Thank you, I will. Okay, Bill. Good night.
Good night. Have a good week.
You too. There he goes. Beep, beep. All right, beep, beep. We'll be right back 21 hours on June the 1st, 2017, tomorrow night.